Welcome to the post-game show.
You know it's the post-game show because we changed the signage.
Ooh, it's a post-game right there.
This is an LED sign. People don't know that. It's definitely not poster board, foam core.
Nope.
It's not that. And this doesn't just flip up and we do it out. This is LED.
Yeah.
Last story we did, I think the last story, was it the last story? The last story was Melania and the Ballerinas, the penultimate story, was the Grammys.
Yes.
I have just recently discovered Spotify. I'm late to things.
Yeah. Yes. I can corroborate that that is a late thing to say.
It's excellent.
Yeah.
What do you like most about it?
Everything you want is on there.
Think of a song, and then you ask for it, and then you play it.
Yeah,
right. It's amazing. You play it again and again and again.
It's like a billion CD changer.
Well, I still think that the greatest day of my life was the day that my friend came to my house and he was like, dude, there's this thing called Napster. And you just type in a song, and then you have it.
Yep.
I never had it.
I never downloaded anything from Napster. I was late to downloading too. I didn't understand it. I was a little afraid of it. I got intimidated by it. I still don't like it. I still, when I have to download something and it goes into the little download section, I'm like, for fuck's sake, now what do I do?
Yeah.
Right.
You know.
We wait. And the best thing about Napster was like, you click on the title, and within a mere 25 minutes, you downloaded 2 megabytes worth of Eminem.
But we've been enjoying the music that has been played today.
In the breaks.
Throughout the breaks. Emma did that?
Irma.
Oh, that was Irma? I don't even see Irma in there.
But I'm going to say,
there she is. There she is. Yeah. It's been excellent. Well done. And I've been listening to a tremendous amount of 10,000 Maniacs.
Oh.
Yeah. And because I'm white. And
yeah. That's fine.
But they're excellent.
Yeah.
Yeah.
10,000 Maniacs, is that what's going on? Is that them? Who is that?
No, that's Four Non Blondes.
There's a number and then what they are. I know, what's 10,000 Maniacs?
You know, like the weather. Hey, Jack Kerouac.
Oh,
a campfire song.
I don't know.
They had two great albums. Natalie Merchant, sort of the lead singer. She was the talent behind 10,000 Maniacs.
Got it.
But it's just great to just one of the riffs that Irma played in the break reminded me. I've been listening to 10,000 Maniacs.
It's funny you say like the moment you encountered a new technology. My version of that is Uber.
Really?
I was in San Francisco in like 2005 or whatever year.
Is that when Uber came out?
It was before anyone knew about it.
You're in San Francisco.
In San Francisco. Like pilot, and so my friend Justin, who's like in tech, was like,
sounds cool.
Let's go outside right now. Like we were going to wait. I was like, how are we going to find a cab? You guys live in like West Portal or something. And I was like, all right, I'll just follow you. And a black car showed up and Justin was like, get in. And I was like, is Justin in organized crime? So we got in and we drove and he was just having this conversation with the guy and I didn't really understand what they were talking about. And then we pull up and we get out.
With no paying.
And I was just like, what just happened?
Yeah, he's in the CIA.
It's amazing, Justin. I knew you had an important job, but I didn't know it was that important.
Right. And I mean, I think by the time Uber became mainstream, I just like was too old already and too jaded to think it was like, you know, that amazing. Because now like, okay, like I was actually watching like that new Western show on Netflix and
Mudbound
or is Godless.
It Godless.
It's quite good. But I was thinking like, this is like also like the kind of thing, like when it got like normalized and I didn't even realize it. It wasn't like that moment where I was like, oh my God, I have all the stuff.
Right. Yeah. You're just like, all right, take it for granted. Just,
okay.
My best friend won't take Lyft because I don't remember the slogans. I'm sure they're not true, but he like Lyft's slogan is like your friend with a car.
Yeah.
And Uber's is your ride share service.
Uber's is like your driver will complain about how much he's getting paid.
Right.
He does not want to speak to people in the service industry. Isn't really, in offense to him, he doesn't really want to speak to anybody.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But he particularly doesn't want to have an awkward conversation. Like if he comes in his hotel room and the cleaning woman is there in a hotel room, he can't. He'll get in and out of the room. He's like, we don't, you know, if they come in and knock and they're like, you know, do you want to turn down service? He's like,
turn down for what?
He's like, I think that that's an increasingly,
you just need to get out of the room.
I think that that's an increasingly common thing.
Yeah, he's very, it makes him very uncomfortable.
Yeah, I think just like, you know, human interaction kind of makes us more and more uncomfortable as time goes. I mean, as time goes by, we get more alienated and alone and atomized and sort of you know, in our own thing. And then right. once we're like in contact with someone, we're like, oh God.
This is what that was like before. Yeah. God, I have to. Yeah, we like Instacart everything.
Yeah.
The only gap is from the refrigerator to my mouth. Like right. I have to move four.
Right.
Otherwise it shows up. I have to put it.
They don't
in
even
the
like. They just like drop it at your door. You don't even have to like open the door.
Yeah,
you know, like you don't have to like. We're gonna live our lives just not needing.
You can't Instacart your life if you're concerned about what your child eats. Now I'm speaking for my wife. I don't care what she eats.
Good for you.
Yeah, she's fine. Everything's fine. We all live to be 95, right? You know, yeah. we all. So, but. Like, so if you want to go like super organic and everything, you have to like, you want to pick out your own vegetables and stuff.
Yeah.
So like the idea of being sort of a young couple.
Well, I'm sure you like can on the new Amazon Whole Foods thing. You can probably
Instacart, depending on where you live, you can have them go to and pick out like organic celery.
I know, but it's like sometimes like the fruit isn't quite right. So
you can tell when an Instacart person is like, I don't care what you want. Like, right. Oh, they're out of it. And like, but it's like, no,
right,
I was
now
there.
You can just have Whole Foods and Amazon are one now. It's the same company.
Yes.
Bless them.
It's going to be like the future that awaits us is the WALL-E future, where we're all just like living on inside a corporation, just kind of like floating around on these things with like tubes in our mouth.
What do you still do that most people like use an app for?
I've never used the grocery one.
You go into the supermarket into the and get thing. That.
Yeah, go and walk down the lane.
We split it. It's about 70%. I do none.
Good for
but,
you.
But it's mostly 70% go to the supermarket. Sometimes stuff gets ordered.
Right.
Okay.
It's never quite right. But you guys probably don't order much.
We don't.
Like
we go
always
like
get so much stuff and it's such a waste.
I went to Costco on like the day before Thanksgiving. And it was hell. It was bedlam. And what was weird
Which Costco you go to?
Hawthorne.
Oh, okay.
And
why?
This is where I live. I live in South Bay.
So why did you go to Costco?
Because we needed a turkey. It was like it came down to the wire with Thanksgiving, and we were like, "Screw it, we're just going to do our own." And so it's like, let's just go get a turkey."
Did you get a whole turkey?
When I needed booze, and I was like, "I don't know, Trader Joe's. I guess I could have gone to." But I also like going. I just got a turkey. But what was weird is that like how much people were buying, and people with multiple turkeys in their cart.
Yeah.
Like your family's too big at that point.
You know, we had 22 people for that. 20 people for Thanksgiving. We went from none to 20 within 22 total with us. It was just going to be the three of us, and then my best friend who doesn't talk to people. He came in from Las Vegas. He drove in with his wife and daughter. And they were like 5 days before Thanksgiving. Before Thanksgiving, I was like, "So what are you guys doing?" He's like, "I don't know. We'll just come to LA. You just make Thanksgiving for us." He said, "Or we'll take you out, whatever you want."
He sounds like a sweetheart.
Yeah, actually, he's great.
A long way to go just to get someone to do something for you.
Right, totally. So the great thing was, he did a couple of things. One, they brought their dog too. The dog's great. But they're like, "So here's the deal: we're staying in a hotel. They don't take big dogs. We're gonna drop our dog off at your house."
Oh, great.
"We'll be by every day to walk it." Never walked.
Yeah, of course.
Never once.
Not once.
It's like the 8-year-old child who says, "Like, no, Daddy, I want a puppy. I swear to God, I'll feed him. I'll watch."
His daughter was like, "Oh, come on, when she was leaving, she's like, "No, I'm not gonna leave the dog. You know, I love the dog. We're gonna take the dog. Of course, we're taking the dog back to Vegas. I love the dog. I want to be with him all the time." Like, apparently not all the time. Mm-mm. Because there were no. Right. I mean, they came when they'd come together, but there was no special walk. So they come and they dump the dog off, and then, which is great. I mean, I was thrilled to have them. We're like, okay, six people, and then we had this family function on Sunday, and there were like 15 family members who were like, "Nah, we don't know what we're gonna do." And we were like, "Well, let's turn it into a thing, right?" So we bought two turkeys from Whole Foods, right? They basically give them away at Whole Foods. And Jesus Christ.
It's really expensive.
Crazy.
There's like a booth they set up where you can like sign up for a turkey.
So here's 20 people, they weren't that big. They were like, I would say, I don't know how big a turkey is.
Your standard small one was 11 pounds.
Turkey size.
They were
12 to 14 pounds.
We totally finished one turkey and did not touch
really?
The second turkey.
See,
that's
I had
20 people.
We had 30 people.
Mm-hmm.
I went back to Miami. My mom hosted 30 people, and we had two turkeys, and they were gone. Not like a single piece of turkey left.
No, we did include it in our 20 people, it must be said, where there were some children. Right. They didn't do it.
We had 30 adults.
Yeah.
30 adults just going
house,
after
two
it.
Two turkeys.
We still have leftovers. I think this is the last day. Jenk said like the Thursday, or a week is the max you can do.
Right.
Before we wrap up, there are those stories that we get that are talked about throughout the week, but you're not on the show where you get to talk about them. One of them that was in the news that we wanted to talk about this post game was the story of the Veritas.
Project Veritas.
Yeah. What did you guys want to say about that?
It's just like, it's just such a story of our time. Like, it really is one of the most 2017 stories where, you know, we live in such a like a weird kind of nihilism where like nothing is real or nothing can be real. That, you know, the Roy Moore has all the allegations of, you know, statutory rape and all that. A woman approached the Washington Post, the same reporter who originally reported the Roy Moore story, and claimed that Roy Moore impregnated her while she was 15 and then drove her to an abortion clinic across the state lines to have an abortion. But then the Post started kind of fishing around her story, started noticing a lot of inconsistencies.
Of course, started doing the things that reporters do, vetting the story.
Yeah, and you know, it was like immediately fell apart instantly because they found a GoFundMe campaign that she had started in order to sort of discredit the liberal media. She claimed that she had interviewed for a job with the Daily Caller, and then they called the Daily Caller. She was like, yeah, the person I interviewed was, I don't remember the name, she said it was like Greg Gregson, you know?
Dr. Rosenpenis.
Right. They called the Daily Caller, like, does Greg Gregson exist? Like, no.
Yeah, we didn't think so.
Right.
That's amazing.
But then the Post kind of started then suspecting that something was afoot, so then they kind of started monitoring her, and they saw her walk into Project Veritas, which is the James O'Keefe organization that is meant to sort of discredit the liberal media, mainstream media, whatever. It's just like, you know, James O'Keefe is like such a product of our time. This like young guy whose just main job is to do these like little pranks and hoaxes and sort of ambushes of journalists. And the sad thing is that maybe not specifically James O'Keefe's, but these attacks on the news media have worked.
James O'Keefe's have worked. I mean, not all of them, but yeah. Shirley Sherrod lost her job. He's totally succeeded because it relies on, only needs a few members of the mainstream media to tout these stories. Mm-hmm. And then because of the rest of the media's desire to be fair, we give credence to those in the mainstream media who tout them. And then they've done, I mean, it's so stupid that we fall for it every time when we know what's happening. But all they need to do is plant the same thing that the tobacco industry did in the 1950s and early 60s. Just plant the seed that, you know, some doctors say it doesn't cause cancer.
Oil companies with climate change.
They're doing the exact same thing. So just plant the seed. And so they plant the seed. Well, maybe Acorn is corrupt, right? Mm-hmm. And maybe they are selling body parts from Planned Parenthood, right? And it's all horseshit, and they got five people to talk about the story and write about it, and then it's out there, and the damage is, you know, largely done. You can mitigate it, and you can make sure people save their jobs, but you've undermined the credibility of truth tellers, and that's what they tried to do here. So the beauty is that the Post caught it. They were cognizant, aware. It turns out we got a little glimpse. Project Veritas gave Americans a glimpse as to what real reporting is, which is somebody comes in and then they vet the hell out of it. They're not going to publish that without talking.
Well, some people would.
Some people would, but still, there's still quality journalism being practiced at places. And the Post Office, they did things like the woman moved her purse.
Right.
And so then it looked like the Post put her purse in front of their purse so it would block the camera.
Right. Yeah.
So then we moved her purse again.
That's amazing. Yeah. I like the moment when they realize, oh my God, is this really happening?
Yeah.
To hold it together as the journalist vetting this source. Right. And then almost have just like, all right, just the idea that I'm just going to kind of fuck with them a little bit. And then I'm going to tail them into Project Veritas.
But to your point about it being this sort of most 2017 thing, is that here was a woman pretending to be the victim of a sexual assault so that she can discredit women who have been the victim of a sexual assault. Like it's wild.
It's completely nihilistic, right? All tribalism and all nihilism.
I get I'm objecting to all tribalism because there's only one tribe doing it.
There's all kinds of anything, you see it a lot of time, like with liberals reflexively defending, for example, like the CIA, whatever it is that's attacking Trump is now good.
Right.
Right? That's an example of the tribalism on the sort of Democratic side.
I don't think it's as pervasive.
It's not equal. I'm not trying to.
I totally get though the idea, like when someone pushes on your hand, you don't just go like this. You provide some kind of force back.
I just think, look, you were literally one of the six smartest people I've sat next to in 2017. So I want to get that. I want to get that out of the way. But the problem is that then when you say afterwards, yeah, of course it's not there are so many people ready and eager to believe that it's the same as an excuse for being able to say, what am I supposed to do?
Right.
They're all crazy and everybody's lying, so I'm going to check out. And I feel like it is one of our responsibilities, certainly not our sole responsibility, to making sure that people check in. And yes, that is certain. They're unquestioned. I'm tribalistic. There's no question there's tribalism.
All are.
And
we all are.
We all are. Human beings are.
Yes.
And it manifests itself for many politically. Some in sports teams are defending when their university is accused of cheating. You're like, well, we didn't cheat as bad as somebody. Hey, man, you cheated.
Or you see Penn State fans defending Joe Paterno.
Penn State fans defending Joe Paterno, but condemning Tennessee for something, right? You know, like it doesn't, none of it makes any sense. But that said, like, in general, what I aim to be tribalistic toward are truth tellers. Sometimes they're wrong, right? And so Democrats supporting the CIA because they're against Trump, sure, but I'm not, I don't know, maybe other leftists are. I'm not against the CIA. I am eager for journalists to out the CIA when the CIA has lied, when the CIA participates along with the Defense Department and others in a massive effort to cover up truth, whether it's Vietnam. You know, but our quick explanations about the CIA in Iraq ignore the fact that tons of people at the CIA were like, no, and their leadership. So the CIA has both lied and told the truth and kept us safe. Like all those things are true about the CIA.
I've seen people, holding up guys like David Frum or Bill Kristol or Jeff Flake or whatever, whoever is the latest person to say that Trump is, a threat to the democracy, reflexively is then embraced by liberals because of their sense of tribalism, right? And I mean, I'm not trying to equate the two. I mean, the Republican Party is beyond anything.
But But is that tribalism or is that the moments that we have where, oh, for crying out loud, your guy is so terrible that a guy who I think is terrible most of the time is recognizing that he's terrible. I mean, tribalism has such a pejorative tone to it, intentionally, and you're using it that way, and I agree largely with that. But, I mean, in any circumstance, I mean, if you're at school and there's a bully and he's being terrible, and then a kind of other bully goes, hey, man, why are you being such a jerk to Nando? Wouldn't we go, my God, even Brett, who's a bully, thinks that Irma is being a bully to you.
Well, yeah. I guess my point would be that the sort of architects of the Bush presidency, even Bush himself, he's now being embraced, right? I mean, the damage that the Bush administration wrought on this country and indeed the rest of the world is, at this point in time, still far worse than whatever Trump has done.
I don't agree. I don't agree about the framing of it all. I think that in any coalition that you build, you need people who, I mean, you end up having or needing people that blindly follow you. And that's going to happen. And there are going to be plenty of people who have only so much bandwidth to process general issues. And there will be those which they research and understand and others that they look to folks that they trust to kind of give them ideas. And they go, yeah, that person's probably right. I think with the Jeff Flake thing, it's like, all right, I have said that my strategy is, it isn't tribalism because I'm like embracing someone from another tribe. You know, it is, okay, I have goals. And my goals include, you know, looking to people from my tribe, but also looking for other people who aren't from my tribe to expand our coalition so that we can accomplish the goals that we seek to accomplish.
The coalition will not be expanded by embracing sort of the conservative leadership. You know, you will only, you know, your coalition is expanded by expanding your voter base.
Well, I think like, no, but the coalition is expanded by espousing things that general people can get behind. And I don't think it's like he's a Democrat, I'm a Republican, he's evil, I'm good, because that's explicitly what's not happening there. At that point, we're saying that Republican is good. Why? Because he's saying something that I believe that he is saying, and we both kind of vibe on that message together. And that message is either that person's corrupt, or this is giving too much money to the rich people, or whatever it is in any given situation.
I, you know, like to me, tribalism is defending Bob Menendez, right? Like a Democrat thinking, we talk about, or even Al Franken, right? You know, and again, I think it's important that we categorize these sins, but Bob Menendez seems pretty corrupt.
Right. The fact that they couldn't just get a clip where Bob Menendez is like, Ken, I will give you this thing for a free ride on your jet. That doesn't exist. Yes, I agree.
So, but Democrats embracing Bush, right, which is what that poll showed, right? That strikes me as that was shocking and unbelievably depressing.
Yeah.
But to me, that was a complete lack of, a loss of perspective, a lack of historical perspective.
Yes.
That doesn't strike me as tribalism.
Same.
It strikes me as a disaster. We're all going to agree that somehow now, because we've found somebody in many ways worse than George W. Bush, that we somehow have decided to ignore the sins of George W. Bush because they're now ranked 44th and 45th on a list of American presidents as a huge, colossal mistake, and that we don't have any interest in history. But I don't see that as tribalism.
Well, it's just it's because they, you know, he said that Trump was a blowhard, allegedly voted for Hillary Clinton, whatever. You know, like that. You know, like any sort of mild criticism of Trump's style is what's like wholly embraced because you're so desperate just to, you know, throw anything at him while ignoring the actual substance of whatever that person has done. Like, I mean, Jeff Flake voted with Trump, like, what is it, 90 some percent of the time? You know, who cares that he wrote that stupid thing? You know, like he is embracing his agenda.
I agree that that's happening, but I don't see it as like, I think tribalism is too simple a like thing to, you know, characterize it as.
What about like who's the Jeff Weaver, the McCain guy? Am I confused?
Yeah. So no, Jeff Weaver was Bernie Sanders.
Who's the Jeff?
The McCain guy?
Yeah.
This guy that talks like this.
So Steve, what about like Steve Schmidt? Evan McMullen.
McMullen, yeah.
Right. So like I'm into these guys now, right? I mean, I'm into them because they seem. I know they are guys I actively disagree with on policy. But yes, because they are not unhinged and because they've been very consistent and solid in their criticism of Trump from the beginning, I have a degree of admiration for them because they have stood up and bucked their party, right? And at a time when they could have, like everybody else, to some extent cashed, well, they probably have cashed in and get on TV a lot, but but they could. They have chosen a different road. It's a nobler road than many have chosen. Am I being tribalistic or am I just recognizing?
I think the alchemy of political success is finding those things to say that are, you know, rallying points that are louder and they outshine those things that obviously politicians have done that are fucking terrible.
Mm-hmm.
And your goal is political success, to win, to make change, and it will require at times, whether it's not virtuous, well, but just saying like this guy bucked his party then, even though he wants to kill like everyone in the Middle East over here.
If the metric is winning power, the Democratic Party has been very bad at that.
Yeah.
On that metric.
I'm not saying
I think
succeeded.
It's a large part.
If you're counting votes and elected people, yeah, sure.
Yeah. If by success you mean winning
elections, right? Yeah. I think a large part of that is because, you know, I think that it is disastrous for Democrats, not just morally or ethically, but strategically, to align themselves with conservatives. It just doesn't work out for them ever. You know, like they always, you know, like, and what it does is it just keeps on moving the Overton window rightward, because they never do the opposite. They never go the other way. You know, it's always one direction.
I just think that this is a time. This is the alignment time.
Yeah, I don't want the result of my admiration, John Weaver, so I was thinking of, by the way, that my admiration for the way John Weaver and Steve Schmidt and Evan McMullen have behaved over the last 16 months to be that the Democratic Party should move toward those guys politically. I don't mean that at all. I just mean like, hey, okay. Thanks.
Steve Schmidt was the incursion of Sarah Palin into our national politics was kind of the Pandora's box that, you know, kind of changed a lot of things, you know, that she was so grossly unqualified that it just kind of, you know, in a way was like the first step.
Yeah, but that's only because we had yet to enter, because in 2000 we were unwilling, you know, Andy Hiller, the reporter, I think WBZ in Boston, who asked George W. Bush those wonderful questions, and Andy Hiller was vilified for asking the exact same kinds of questions that Katie Couric was then praised for asking of Sarah Palin. So
I actually think that's a great strategy for interviewing politicians, just the basics. Totally.
Right, sure. Why is it important to support this leader, and why does this country matter?
Reporters, when they interview politicians, outthink themselves. And they just it always gives politicians the ability to just not answer the question. But like if you ask someone, what do you read? I don't know, you know, like, basic, simple.
You mean stuff. When you're they're like, is it not true that one point you said this,
right,
when on December 8th you said that?
They can just reject the premise of the question and move on. But like a simple thing that like a child would ask, like that's like the...
Outing unqualified people should be, if not job one, then certainly job two or three of the American press corps. Mm-hmm. And when we find an unqualified person, you know, Mitt Romney, we disagree with that, everything, was probably not unqualified, right? You know, he met the standard of a guy who could be president. He would have been a bad president, I think, and we'd be objecting to him. But George W. Bush was unqualified. Donald Trump was unqualified. Every Republican who doesn't think, my God, this is what we've, our last two winners have been these two.
But they broadly support his agenda.
That's right.
They substantively support his agenda. They object to his style and the superficiality of it all. But in terms of the actual agenda that's being implemented, they broadly support.
Well, it depends on who
you're talking about. Trump now?
Yes.
Yeah. We're talking about the tax cuts.
It's a messaging.
The tax cuts, the repealing Obamacare.
It's a communications issue.
Yeah, they support all that stuff. This Consumer Financial Protection Bureau thing, aggressiveness towards Iran, embrace of Saudi, like whatever. All the substantive issues that Trump is actually doing, the Republican establishment who is disgusted by his boorish style, broadly supports all of it.
Yeah,
but, I mean, it's just,
which is a messaging failure on the other side.
Yes,
oh, well, we got a big messaging problem.
Get people to pick it up. Speaking of messaging, this is the end of our message. Bye.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you.